get right back to our extraordinary evening with Bill Tompkins. We are looking at pictures. Let me get a comment, Bill, real quick from George Filer and Frank on where we are at this point. George, how are we doing here? Very interesting to hear that Admiral Riccobata was so blown away with these pictures, he didn't believe they were real, apparently, from what we're hearing.
Well, you know, there's always been that question, that did the Nazis have these craft or not? And I tried to research that through the years and talked to some various colonels, generals. And General Watson was a colonel at the end of World War II, and he was an Army Air Corps colonel. And his job at the end of World War II was to collect all the Nazi aircraft, particularly the experimental aircraft, and bring it to the United States. And they loaded these various aircraft, you know, ME-262s and the Comet and so on, the different ones that we're aware of, on the British aircraft carrier, and it sailed and went to the United States, and most of the planes then were taken or flown, either flown or over, or went overland to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Well, in talking to General Watson, I would ask him about UFOs and so on, and he always acted like they were not alien. He never said they were actually German. So I went to the Air Force Library, and I asked about what kind of planes were on that ship. And they gave me a list of the planes, but some were not, you know, had like an experimental craft or something. In other words, no real designation of what they were.
Right.
And I always wondered if some of those were the alleged UFOs or, you know, this type aircraft that they had. My point is that what's being said also starts to fit in with what General Watson indicated, that these were not extraterrestrial, at least in his opinion. And I always wondered about that.
Well, very interesting. All right, Frank, your thoughts up to this point?
It's been a remarkable presentation. I'd like to ask Bill if any of the operatives ever had the ability or the capability of being able to ask and travel in them to...
Okay, Frank's breaking up a little bit. Bill, did you ever...
The operatives ever.
Yeah.
From my knowledge, none of them actually flew in the vehicles. They got into them. I climbed into them. And one of them even tried to start one. But he thought he knew what the operation was to turn it on.
Wow. But, was he going to try and fly it out of there?
If he could, he would fly it out. He was, in fact, quite a number of them were pilots.
Oh.
The Navy lieutenant operatives.
Uh-huh.
But I never heard any of them say that they flew in them.
Okay. Very good.
Jeff,
now,
I would also...
Frank, go ahead.
If we can, I'd like to ask Bill if the operatives were able to learn the capabilities of these discs for speed and for ability of even...
Yeah, were they able to get technical specs on them pretty well down for their reports to the Admiral and to you and others?
They brought operating manuals, okay, which were tremendously valuable.
I guess, yeah.
And they even had maintenance documents, and they had documents on laser weapons, which they, of course, would then replace the 20 millimeter and 40 millimeters that they had on the last photograph.
They had lasers?
They had laser weapons.
Beam weapons. All right.
Yes, beam weapons.
Oh,
and,
okay.
But I think what we're talking about also is that I've been looking through some of the photographs, and there's one there. Maybe you can pull it up.
Yeah.
Where it showed a German balloon, military balloon. It has a great big German cross on it.
Yeah. It's a barrage balloon, and there's a UFO under it. You folks can find that. Just scroll down a little further. There's a clear balloon. It's a barrage balloon, not a blimp. It looks like a blimp, but there's no undercarriage. It's just a balloon.
No power.
Right under that is a hovering, one of the German discs. What about that picture?
Okay, what I'm trying to say is that's not a weapon. That's a test program. And if you look closely at all of the vehicles and that are down on the bottom of the photograph, you don't see any tanks or any large weapons, cannons or anything. That's strictly a test program for that class.
I see.
And so it's really it has nothing to do with a weapon.
Uh huh. This one has one round protrusion in the center of the bottom, rather than three. Many of them have three, which we've seen over here in the George Adamski type craft from the 1950s. The same three orbs on the bottom of the craft in a triangular array. So that's interesting. It has one that's visible. So it would be a test craft. Okay. All right. Now, why don't you pick the pictures you'd like to talk about, and we'll kind of find them.
Okay.
There is one of a triangular craft sitting on three landing gear, a nose, and you can see three wheels. The nose of it has been opened up, the front of the triangle, and you can see inside where the pilot sits. You can see two foot controls, one left and one right. And then what appears to be on top of it is a point that goes straight up. I don't know if that's a tail. I don't think so. It may be part of the canopy. It may be something. But you can see from the front that's opened up on this triangular little delta-looking craft two foot controls, which are very interesting, suggestive of not anti-gravity, but something else.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have that one.
All right.
But... I'd like to go to one of the really clear pictures of a large, very large vehicle.
Okay.
This one has the 40 millimeters up off of the turret on top of the upper structure. It has the six windows, too. And there's a number I-5 right next to the German cross.
Oh, I see it. It's a black and white picture. It's has number 15, or I-15, to the left of the Iron Cross. There are two 40-millimeter cannon on top of it. And again, down below, there appear to be an array of them, four of them, scattered around the craft. This craft has six-wheeled landing gear to roll around on the ground. So it came down on rubber wheels, six per assembly, or three per assembly. And there are four of them. That craft, we've got that picture.
Okay, it's interesting that particular view, in my opinion, that's real. That's not a faked photograph. But it's interesting that the landing gear has these actually... what appears to be three separate wheels on each strut.
Right.
There's two struts, but it looks like there's three wheels. Now, and the tires.
Yeah.
But what is very interesting in these type of extraterrestrial vehicles is that the vehicle appears to be thousands of tons weight, whereas... it's made of material, not unlike aluminum, but it's extremely light vehicle. It's not heavy. It's not a heavy structure. Now, one of the others that looks very similar to this, but smaller, actually was built out of chromoly steel. And that one, of course, weighed unbelievable compared to all of these others. And I never found out why it was that they built that one. It certainly wasn't a production one.
Mm-hmm.
But they built the same shape, slightly smaller. It's 20%, 30% smaller than this vehicle, but it looked just like it. And it was made of chromoly steel.
Chromoly. Chromoly. Okay.
Amazing. The point being that there were hundreds of different types of just UFO-shaped vehicles designed. Many of them never put in production. But the ones that they put in production was mass production. And I think that we haven't gotten to the Triangler, and we haven't gotten to the Cigar.
Right. We have no pictures of those, by the way. But this one, with number 15 on the top round turret formation above the disc shape, with six portholes viewable and visible on this side, and two 40-millimeter cannons on top, on the right-hand side of the top. That's quite an imposing photo. Each strut has three wheels. Now, if this was an ET gift craft, why would the ETs make a craft with rubber wheels for landing? Was that something they did for the Germans?
The Germans did that.
Oh, and the Germans did it.
Yes, and there were many things that, say, one of the managers or one of the engineers said, well, why don't we use so-and-so, and because we can get that. And so even in the interior of the vehicles, things were not as the vehicles that were given to them. Because remember, they didn't just have the vehicles given to them. They had all kinds of information, so the Germans then were running and trying to build a similar type. And so there was not as much of a research program as there was, as it would be with a production company like an aircraft company here, putting vehicles in production.
So they were replicating as much as inventing, I say.
Yes.
Now, there's a picture directly above that on our array. It's a color photograph of a similar shaped craft, but the top of the disc has sections, and each section appears to be canted upward slightly and overlaid on the one in front of it, all the way around the disc. It's not a smooth top, in other words. There are seams, and it appears to be a whole bunch of sections. Maybe, I'm guessing, 10, 12 feet, and they're up on a slight angle, and they sit up on the back of the one in front of it. It's a very unusual construct. There's a truck off to the left, and it's a big ship. I don't know if you have that one either. I wish you could get on a computer and look and see what we're seeing, but we'll do all right here.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like to go back to the previous photograph for just a minute.
Sure.
If you will look at the 40 millimeters, look at the lighter shade hump that's on the top.
I see
it. It's not centered.
No, it's offset to the left, yeah.
It's offset to the left. Now, that's a turret.
Oh, so I see. So it spins.
Your balance of the turret is the center line balance to the vehicle, and the turret is almost the center line of that German cross.
I see.
And so it cantilevers out aft on the rear end.
Uh-huh.
And so to have that large of a turret for 50 calibers was very unusual, too. And so that's like a modification that the Germans made for that class of
craft. I see. I see. That craft might have been originally without a turret on the top, and the Germans added it with a center of gravity right over the axis. Yeah, right over the axis of the actual disc. I see. Now, I have a question. During the war, we hear a lot of talk about how our pilots were seeing Foo Fighters. They were said to be small, glowing orbs of light that would be hanging around the bomber formations. Was Foo Fighter also a term that could have applied to some of these that our people were seeing and engaging with, but it was kept obviously quiet? They were described as lights for the media, but were they also perhaps disc craft?
Some actually were. Most of them were not. It was just an electromagnetic vehicle disturbing everything. And the ones that were real were very small, like only 15, 20 feet in diameter.
I've seen movie film of some of these Foo Fighters, and they're just white daylight looking orbs floating through a bomber formation. They were very strange. They 4 or 5 feet maybe in diameter. That's it. Small.
Yeah, and we didn't get those until the latter part of the war. The 8th Air Force got them, and the British too. But that again.
What were those orbs of light, or light-colored orbs, white orbs, that were daylight and floating through the bomber formations? Do we know?
From what I know, and certainly I'm no expert in those, my understanding was that those were had two missions. One, to disturb the formations.
Right.
To get aircraft to actually hit each other.
Break out of their box formation, hit each other, whatever, yeah.
Yes. And secondly, they were to disorientate the crew members.
Well, I would do that. I'm sure it would. Get their mind on something else.
Mm-hmm. And those didn't even appear until late in the war.
Yeah, right toward the end. Well, I have seen amazing footage of that. Just was a part of an introduction of a BBC or a British documentary about the air war, and they put that in with no explanation. It was just there. And I said, my goodness, there are some Foo Fighters. They're glowing orbs of white light in the daylight, and they were moving right through the bomber formations. Interesting. All right, the next picture that we might want to look at, I don't know if you have it or not, it looks like a Tiger tank parked next to an enormous craft behind it, guarding it, perhaps. Do you have that picture?
I'm just looking here. Yes.
You can't see you only see about half the craft behind it, the big disc. But that's
yes.
Huge. That's a couple hundred feet across.
Easily, because that is a very large tank that's there in front.
Right.
And you notice there's a total difference in the shade and the color between the tank and the vehicle, the UFO.
Yeah.
And that particular vehicle is far more streamlined than everything that you've shown so far. There's not the sharp edges.
Right.
You notice the way it curves up to the top?
Yeah, it's called a Hanabu 3.
Like you say, a much larger vehicle.
Yeah, and we have a picture on our array to the left of it, another view of the Hanabu, H-A-U-N-E-B-U, Hanabu 3 craft. And yes, they're much more sleek and aerodynamic. They don't have a round, squared off top to the disc portion. So yeah, very good. All right. What other pictures do you have there? We'll find them.
I think something that's really is interesting is there's two photographs of looking at the bottom of the UFO, and the landing gear is extended. They're sort of pink in color. One of them is a really clear one.
There's one I'm looking up at now. The disc is segmented. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 segments. You can see structural members inside the skin. And then there's a triangular type landing gear. I assume that's what it is, but they look rather straight and pointed. And the very center of the bottom of the craft is an iron cross. Are you seeing that one?
I'm looking for that one because I have the other one here.
All right, I see the other one. Is that airborne also? And it's got three. The landing gear they're straight posts coming out of a little housing.
Yes, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that landing gear.
Okay, that craft and the one I just pointed out to Bill in your folks in your lineup. Let's see, if you got the big one with the iron cross in it, go up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 pictures above that. It's the same craft. The landing gear is pointed straight down. They're posts is what they are, and it's airborne. You can see the segments in the disc, by the way, carefully.
Yes.
All right.
All right. Now, this is sort of is a good one to demonstrate how light the UFO is. It's sort of a pole coming down, and if you can visualize any of you fellows in your office chair, look at the wheels on your office chair so you can roll around on the smooth floor. That's essentially what you're looking at in this vehicle, because the vehicle is so light, there's almost no weight. It's so small. And so you don't need great big wheels for landing gear. You can just push it around any smooth surface. And if you have all concrete all around your hangars and the area outside of the hangars, it's just easy to push. And so those little wheels are at the bottom. If you can look at it closer, you can see they're just exactly like what you have on your chair. If you happen to have a smooth floor.
So those are little wheels.
Little tiny wheels. It's amazing.
Okay. So once the craft would be landed, it could be moved around easily, too.
Yes, very easy, if the surface is smooth.
Uh-huh. All right. Okay, next. Do you have the interior picture of one of these craft?
Yes.
We have a very impressive interior picture, extraordinary picture of one of these craft. Tell us about that.
Well, you're not looking, unfortunately, at the control part, which is what you really want to see.
Right.
But this does demonstrate the very light material that the walls are made of on most of them.
They look like squares. They all look like tiles almost.
Yes, and they're very easily assembled, and because it's, in most cases, the ones that they had in production were made of aluminum. And you see the windows there going around it. Actually, you can see it in both the photographs.
Right.
I think it's extremely interesting to see, visualize what the outside of the vehicle is, and you're seeing it exactly. You're seeing the exact shape inside. It's not cut up into rooms, which you would think it would be.
Right. Now, those, I want to point out also, excuse me, Bill, there is, in that picture, it's like a quarter of a circle of the inside, the radius of this craft on the inside. Look at the walls, and I think you'll see there's one round porthole, and then there are some oval-looking designs put into the wall, but I can't see out from those, and I don't see any any photographs of any of the craft that have an oval-shaped porthole. They're round. So I'm not sure that those round ovals on the sides that we're seeing are necessarily to look out. They may be something else.
Okay. Jeff, if you could look at the one photograph where there's a porthole that's very bright.
Yeah.
On one. The one on the right to that, look at it. It's the oval shape on the outside, but there's a window in that one.
Okay. It's, in other words, it's a porthole on the outside, but the inside is like a rounded rectangle. You know what?
Yeah.
Hold on. Wait a minute. This is one of those tricks of light. If you look to the right at these oblong oval-looking things, I'm going to suggest that those are not into the wall, but those are actually arrayed to push inside the craft. There's something on the wall. Those aren't holes in the wall. Look at them as something that's extruding from the wall. That's what it is. It's just a trick of the eye. It's like looking at a crater and trying to figure out if it's a hole or a hill. But these are sticking out.
Yes.
They're sticking out, and they're sticking into the inside of the craft. And then we have two portholes that are visible. I got it. Yeah, I wonder what those things are that are extruded out. They look like a kind of a long loaf of black bread, rounded.
Yeah.
Very
and
odd.
There's quite a number of unreal-looking shapes above them on the next second
I see it.
Radius above.
I see that.
And then there's one of them that has sort of a half round shape to it with two protruding things off
uh-huh.
the bottom.
Yeah.
Which appears to be, one of them appears to be pointing towards sort of the dark the dark areas that appeared to have portholes in them.
Uh-huh.
Now there's another chance for sort of countering a little bit from what you're saying. Those could be penetrating in an oval type areas around it.
Right.
But at least one of them that's closest to the right-hand side.
Yeah.
But look also at the very left. You're looking at a vertical tube that's coming from the floor.
Sure.
And going up through the other raised area.
Uh-huh.
Which looks like the outside of the vehicle.
Yeah.
You can actually see the four different levels and different angles of the vehicle on the inside. So
you're almost
repeating the structure inside.
You know the things on the you're right the things on the wall and you mentioned that the above them were some very odd looking things protruding. And they are lined up with these black oval shapes on the wall. So they somehow they're... this is an E.T. craft. This is not a German craft. This had to be one that was given to them, right? It looks very,
right.
very, very advanced. So something's... Yeah.
Very interesting. I just wish we could have seen the ones that were at the bottom.
Still
trying to get us a couple of those.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
Okay. There's another series of three pictures, and on the bottom of the disc, one of them is clearly the SS insignia, right in the center on the bottom. And another one at the bottom, or maybe it's the top, I don't know, has a 02 numerals and a single lightning bolt to the right, not a double. Well, that's odd. There's too many of these, and they're obviously old. They're very strange. And we've got
Jeff.
Some,
I was mentioning.
Yeah,
Jeff. I was talking to Bill, and the research that I was doing seemed to indicate that there were parallel programs going. One that was creating craft specifically for the SS. And another parallel program for the German military. and they seemed to be running different types of ships, but the ones with the SS would have that insignia on them, or sure. some kind of logo that would indicate it was part of an SS program.
Hmm. Well, the SS disc, again, has segments that appear to be almost over, extending over the one in front of it as it moves around the radius of the disc. Interesting. They're not flat. They're slightly canted, mm-hmm. At least on that picture. All right. Well, we've got a whole bunch more pictures here that you folks can all look through, and some very interesting pictures of discs in the air, with a BF-109 flying past one of them. These pictures look almost like they were taken in a big hurry, some of them. Like somebody snapped a picture and hid a camera away. And then there's the picture of, apparently, 2 days after Germany's total surrender, there's a picture of a disc being chased by a P-51.
Yes.
Don't know yes. if you have that one or not.
Yeah. Yes, I do. Excellent picture. What's also interesting in that is to try to figure out what the cloud formation is, and or the surface. And mm-hmm. then at the extreme left is a very dark area, mm-hmm. Almost like the cloud was circular.
Or the extreme bottom left of that picture would be the cockpit of the plane that was taking the picture. Somebody
but
took that
well
picture. So
yeah. The pilot took the picture.
Yeah.
Of the other P-51.
Right. Now we also have... Go ahead, Frank.
I was going to say, look at the photo right below it that shows the two men standing close to the dome
yeah.
on that craft. And
yeah.
the scale of that craft is enormous.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have that picture, Bill? It's a landed craft, and there's a little house, a house on the left, full-size house on the left of it with a number of people, 4 or 5 people. And then there are two people standing way up on top of the craft on the edge of the topmost part before it becomes a round dome on the top.
I'm looking.
We got to get Bill a computer here.
Yeah. That's an enormous craft, Jeff.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. That could be 300 feet across. Okay. There's another picture, if you happen to see it, Bill. It's of a construction project. A large, domed, rounded top, obviously in construction. There's rebar sticking up all over the place. It's concrete. Do you have that one with a crane in the center, foreground? That's an interesting picture because you don't notice it at first, but...
Excuse me. Are we talking about the Delta-shaped vehicle?
No.
No.
No. We're talking about a building project with a large crane right in the center of the picture.
I have that one, yes.
Yeah, there's a rounded roof behind it. Well, look to the left of the rounded roof, and what do we see?
We're not supposed to see that, Jeff.
I didn't see it.
Okay, it looks, in this photograph, like you're looking at the water of the dam. Okay, the dam is across the top,
uh-huh.
and this is an overflow, a concrete overflow area. And for some reason, he's not parked. He's just showing the other guy how close he can get to the wall.
That's just a spillway, and this whoever's flying that disc. And there's another picture of that disc we have as well. It's got a post out of the top of it, straight up. But that disc is hovering right in there, next to the wall, over the spillway, if that is a spillway.
Wait a minute, Jeff. Actually, there was a bet there, okay? He bet the other guy how close he could get to the concrete. Come on.
don't mess with SS technology like that. Wow. All right, well, now that craft is a prototype craft, and let me find the original picture of it because it's rather crude looking on the top. You go way back up to the top of the page, One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eighth picture down, you'll see that what looks like that craft. It's a round disc with a round top. Let's call it a porthole section. Above that is a square box, and above that is a square peg that's sticking straight up. There's an automobile under it on the right-hand side. Now, that looks like the craft that is hovering on that spillway, exactly like that craft
same
in that
shape.
Photograph. Same craft, same shape craft. How interesting. Well, I don't know. Hot dog pilots, you know?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Bill, what other pictures do you have that you want to try and direct us to here? We've got a whole bunch.
Yeah, there's... maybe this is one that you described before, and I didn't get it. But there's one of the photographs shows a UFO. You're looking at the lower part of it. It's a very dark one. And there's a fighter, German fighter, up on the left-hand side, just passing the UFO. And his engine appears to be running. And it does have a cross on the side of the German...
That's a 109.
109, yeah. You can see the crosses on the bottom of the wing, too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an interesting photo. It could have been faked, but I almost think that the lighting is... look at the depth of the shady side of both of the wing on the fighter and the bottom of the UFO.
It's very similar. Yeah.
And so it's not clear, but it really looks like an actual photograph from another fighter, or maybe from another UFO. And
Notice
there is some sort of a little raised area at the top of the UFO. There's an oval and a lower type of vertical. Most of the others have much higher vertical. There are so many photographs they've got here. It's amazing.
There's no doubt that the Germans had a very advanced program of extraordinary flight technology. Where they got it, some of it came apparently as a gift or an exchange from the Draco reptilians that they made a deal with. That's the story. And they began to produce them. They didn't have to back engineer much. They probably had the blueprints and everything. They could just make them. Now, what this probably did was kept the German general staff, those who knew about these things, awake nights. Well, we've got these wonder weapons, why can't we use them? And as Bill has expressed earlier, there apparently weren't enough capable, competent flight crews around to man them. And there were some, obviously, here that are very early stages, prototypical stages, that aren't finished products. And then there are some that are finished with, they're loaded with armaments. Wow. Battle wagon.
Jeff, I'd like to ask Bill what the operatives were saying regarding the propulsion systems of these discs.
All of the earlier ones were what you have called electromagnetic. Many of the others, and particularly the large ones, were full anti-gravitational. So it's not that some of them were better powered. This is just different types of propulsion. And I'd like to go back to what Jeff was saying a minute ago. If you look at all of this, look at all of these photographs, you have to ask yourself, where could the Germans get this? How could they come up themselves with something that is so advanced that literally nobody else on the planet has even an understanding of what they look like or what they are? And you're not seeing one kind. You're seeing boxes full of all different kinds of just UFOs. We haven't even talked about triangles or cigars.
Well, we'll get there.
And But you have to ask yourself, come on.
Are these, yeah, you ask yourself, let me phrase it for you. You ask yourself, are these pictures all fakes? No chance. No way. Some of them may be. But there are clearly, as Bill is saying, a multitude of different design characteristics we're seeing expressed, some very obviously preliminary, early, rather crude. The Hanabu 3, very sleek, very advanced. These craft existed, and some of them are sitting in warehouses over here at Area 51, underground at Wright-Patterson. These things weren't trashed. They weren't cut up like all the rest of the German Air Force was. And it was just, again, too little, too late, apparently. We're going to get to an amazing part of the story, too, which involves some Nordic women. So don't go away. This is really an amazing look at something that nobody talks about. This is a first. We've never had this kind of exposure. And I want to repeat again what Bill said. Look at the different types of variations of these flying discs. Just amazing. Go ahead, Bill.
Jeff, I'd like to ask Bill a question.
All right, Frank's got a question, Bill. Go ahead, Frank.
I'd like to ask Bill publicly, at what point did the operatives start sharing with the admiral and the captains and yourself the capability of time travel with any of these discs?
Okay, you and I talked about that a little bit.
Can we hold that question for the next hour?
Sure.
I'd like to get into that then. Let me ask Bill this. When you're sitting in the room with these spies, operatives that come back, some with pictures, some with drawings, certainly a lot of them with verbal intelligence, when they're telling you this, and you said the Admiral, Riccobata, was at one point, he would swear, and he said, this crap can't be real. What are the operatives, the agents, the spies, telling you, and how are they trying to get this across to the Admiral, for example, and you, that this is real stuff? Did they have a problem with that? Now, you said before you joined, they were already reporting these things, so I'm not saying that this happened on your watch immediately, initially. They were already doing it. But what was the mental state of these people reporting this kind of technology? And how in the hell did they get so close to such an ultra beyond top secret project? That's the most amazing part.
Well, I think the answer to the amazing part was, what it's hard for us to believe is how much of this was being developed. I mean, in production, massive, hundreds and hundreds of massive underground in-mountain production facilities building these things. And what in the world is that for? They could take out the whole 8th Air Force with three of them if they could finally get them to be able to operate them. And you also want to address how close you came to winning the war. And now, unfortunately, that gets into another tremendously interesting subject, paperclip, because you didn't win the war. I hope we have some time for that, too.
We will. We can start on paperclip now, and just let me just kind of wrap up our little picture tour here. You're all invited to look at these pictures, share them, be amazed, dismiss some, whatever, but there are too many. And look at the variations. Consider that. Too many different kinds. Some of these pictures are just stunning. Also, when you look at the top, remember the video. I'm going to release the video to general audiences here tonight. World War II German flying disc technology. And that video has the only known clip that we believe to be legitimate of a flying German saucer, a disc. And that is the beginning of the video. The video moves through with all these pictures and more. And at the end of the video, we have that statement from Admiral Dönitz that we have created for the Führer an impregnable fortress in the Antarctic. And after that, I put some pictures of some of the enormous caverns in the Antarctic that the Germans did photograph and did release in their 1938-39 films. So they're there as well, to give you an idea. What could have gone on in Antarctica? The sky's the limit. No pun intended. It's just, it's all possible. So look at the pictures.
Statement, Jeff.
Yes?
That statement by Donitz is so telling. It's so revealing.
Yeah, it is. By the way, at the end, the statement is, if you didn't remember it or haven't seen it, the German submarine fleet, said Admiral Dönitz, is proud of having built for the Führer in another part of the world a Shangri-La on land, an impregnable fortress. He was talking about the Antarctic. And there are a number of pictures in the video after that as well. Now, we have two sets of pictures of women. There are two women, two girls. You know the pictures, Bill. You want to get into that for right now? And let's start with who these women were. They're what we'd call Nordics. We're suggesting that they're part ET, perhaps. What do you think? Tell us about these pictures. And you can find those at the bottom of the scroll on those of you who are on computer looking at our pictures. Just scroll down toward the bottom. Maria Orsic.
Yeah. This is the young lady living in Germany, just outside of the border, who was contacted in something time frame around 1898. And she was telepathically contacted and told to design and build large spacecraft transport and get all of her family and friends and many, many other people that she knew in this vehicle and fly out to another star's planetary system.
Why was she given a safe exit for her and all of her friends? And we're looking at a woman who is not an ET, correct? We think she's a terrestrial woman?
No, she's not an ET.
Okay.
She's just another beautiful blonde. But the point is that like Frank will tell you, she never appeared to age either over that time. But that woman, that girl, then contacted many, immediately contacted sort of 12 or 14 of her girlfriends, they immediately started to do what was obviously something that was insane, because there's no way they could do it. But they were given so much information, that it, ricocheted out through that part of Germany, and it ended up, like in my book, the contacted by extraterrestrials, they then turned out to be 1,443 people who were designing and building very large spacecraft carriers, not saucers like we're talking about here. The first two they built were saucer-shaped, and those are the two that the Air Force has out of Area 51 now. But those girls, and all those men and other ladies, when the SS found out what they were doing, they confiscated everything that they had and made them go to work for them, go to work for the German Third Reich.
May I have a question, Bill? Where did these women get the technology, the expertise, the money, the backing to build these craft? Who was backing them?
The finance was unbelievable. That was provided also. And yes, some of the farmers and some of the less educated actually took loans. And this is another part of this thing I don't even think I discussed with Frank. Much of the money, individuals were so driven to do this, they got contracts so that their house now is owned by the bank. they gave up their own savings. They did everything to get the money, to get the materials to build these things. And as insane as this sounds, it really took place. And within less than a year, there were over 1,000 people working on the same thing with the girls.
Well, you don't keep a secret like that from the SS for very long. So the SS came in and said, we want this technology. So they absorbed it, and then they gave it back and did their own thing.
Yes.
That's what we talked about earlier. Okay, all right. I'm going to leave all of you to ponder this, and we'll come right back with Bill Tompkins in a few minutes. And while we're gone, do take a look at the video. It is, I think, very intriguing. I think you'll like it. It's right at the top of the video and photo page under guests at Rents. So click on and enjoy. And we'll be back.